I couldn't be religious and gay. It was impossible.
I was being marketed as some sort of like teenage it girl.
When a girl kissed me on my 18th birthday, a whole other world opened up to me.
I was a minor nuisance.
8 Australians will tell you about the choices that have led them to unexpected places.
These are some of the stories you will hear on Let Me Tell You, a podcast where real people tell incredible real stories.
Look for Let Me Tell You and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Mayday. Mayday's in Canada. Mayday's everywhere. Families sometimes, just people. People who are trying to do some good.
You don't own me, I'm not your property. So take a shifty little beady eye of me.
We thought we made it up. We thought it wasn't real.
Welcome to Eyes on Gilead, a weekly podcast dedicated to The Handmaid's Tale. There is a lot going on in this show, and we think it helps to talk it out after every episode. I'm Fiona Williams, and when I'm not doing this, I'm head of curation at SBS On Demand, and I'm joined by my friends, colleagues, and fellow resistors. Natalie Handley, managing editor of SBS Voices.
Hello.
Heidi Island, channel manager of SBS On Demand.
Hello.
And Sana Kadar, host of ABC Radio National's All in the Mind.
Hi.
Hello. We're back at it. We are 3 episodes into season 5 of The Handmaid's Tale, and we have just watched episode 503, which is called Border. And this one is written by Ali Munro and directed by Dana Gonzalez. June and Moira journey to the border to send a message.
We can get past Gilead cell tower surveillance with sat phones, but it's a slow process. It's going to take a while to get down the chain to your guy.
Meanwhile, Serena Joy attends a dinner party at the Lawrence house.
I believe you already know the commander, Serena?
Yes, Nick's an old friend. I haven't had the chance to meet Mrs. Blaine.
Rose, please, Mrs. Waterford.
And Aunt Lydia prays for Janine's recovery.
Please do not punish her to teach me a lesson. I will turn things around.
This one has a lot going on. What stood out? Let's go around the room. Sana, let's start with you. What stood out for you in this episode, big or small?
My favourite scene is that scene where Serena and Lawrence are sitting side by side in what looks like their thrones in the Lawrence household. And the whole time I'm going, oh, my God, is this relationship about to happen? I was definitely duped at that point. And that was a beautiful shot too. So that's my highlight and what stood out to me.
Yeah, there is so much in that, and then it reaches a delicious conclusion, but let's not get ahead. But yeah, the thrones was a nice touch. Heidi, what stood out for you this week?
I think what stood out for me this week were all of the really unexpected reactions that came across Serena's face throughout the episode. Like there was the one in the hotel room where she asks Tuello to leave and then he gets up and leaves and she looks so shocked, like she's been jilted. Yeah, there were just so many moments where she was caught by surprise and caught off guard and her reactions were priceless.
Yeah, that one in the hotel room, she catching her breath a little bit, telling him that, you know, which doesn't want people, i.e. him, to get the wrong idea. Yeah, it was a little bit, you know, clutch the pearls, fan the throat. It was, yeah, a little bit spicy. Nat, what stood out for you this week?
Yeah, I realised later that it was an episode where both Janine and June got some commentary on their personalities and especially as birth mothers. Mrs. Putnam said that she, in a nice moment, said that she won't let Angela forget where she gets her nice personality from. Mm-hmm. But then Mrs. McKenzie at the dinner table says she can't understand how Hannah is so sweet while Agnes is so sweet considering who her birth mother is.
It's one of God's great mysteries how her sweet angel came from that devil of a woman.
I just thought, poor June. She just can't get a break, can she?
Yeah, interesting subject of genetics there. Good ones. Yeah, for me, it was looking at two different ways that people had stunted goodbyes. You mentioned the Naomi scene where she's farewelling Janine in the hospital. Happily, it's not the end, but she says a lovely goodbye. Mm. And then elsewhere, Serena to Tuello, and vice versa. They're saying their goodbyes, but happily not to be because she gets her marching orders and right back on the plane with the tail between her legs. But I loved that, you know, there are these quite big moments thinking of the occasion where people are saying goodbye to someone and then it's, no, surprise, life's getting in the way, so they're not at all. And then I guess another hint of that is Nick and June on the phone where it's kind of a goodbye, but it's never a goodbye with those two. But, yeah, maybe that's a third that is yet to be resolved. So let's get into the guts of the episode. In this one, we open in the wake of last week's funeral threat being lobbed at June in front of the world, and everyone in the house, Moira, June, Luke, is reeling from seeing Hannah being used so spectacularly and so visibly. And June is clutching that little pic of little Hannah that Nick gave her, and she's fixated on the colour, as were we. She, you know, her only lines really in that scene are, what was she wearing?
What was
that colour? What was she wearing? What the fuck
what
was
the
that
colour?
Like four first lines in this episode. You know, wondering, what does this mean? You know, we colours mean everything. Yeah, let's talk through that scene, just the mood in that household after last week.
I thought it was funny that as soon as she says, what was she wearing, I knew she meant colour.
Yeah, not what was that dress. What does that literally mean to our little girl's life?
Yeah. And the colour is interesting. It's a great choice because purple is made by mixing blue and red, right? Like, so she's literally half wife, half handmaid. She could go either direction. Mm. So that was clever, I thought.
Yeah. Both are mums, like, yeah. And Moira, as well as thinking, what was Mark doing? She was like, what was he there with Serena? What's he doing there? I think Luke's saying, like, maybe he's flipped Serena into being a witness. But the Moira and June dynamic here and across the episode, you know, they've been at loggerheads, and Moira doesn't quite understand June at the moment. They're a little off kilter, especially June's volatility. She reluctantly offers up that there is this group at the border who can get messages to other people, and she's been sitting on that who knows for how long. June is displeased, and June rightly makes the point. Moira doesn't get to make the call on where June's head's at. She's her own person, but, I think that connects with Moira, and she says, I'll ask them to meet with the stipulation for Hannah, not for you, June. And I think pointedly here, she does also make the point that, you know, no men are allowed. This is just the girls are sorting out this one, that, you know, does sit in stark contrast, intentionally, of course, but with all the men making the decisions in Gilead. I think it's a nice marrying point to seeing the high commanders later on calling the shots. It's a good study in contrast, the intentional gender flip here.
Yeah, I love having these new little bits of kind of world building on both sides of the border. This idea that there's this collection of women along the border at little outposts, and they are Mayday, which we kind of find out later on. Mm. And even more importantly, we find out that some of the people connected to that group are also connected to June in really interesting ways. And it's wonderful to kind of have all these whispers of Mayday throughout the season and then start piecing together how Mayday really does fit together in the real world, and it's very grassroots and it's led by women and they're angry and they are armed. And I just really enjoyed watching that side of Mayday get unraveled in this episode and revealed to us.
The mention of Mayday in a couple of scenes, that really hit me a little bit, because it's sort of, I love the way that this season is maybe more than others in conversation already with the past seasons and referencing other episodes. And I'm just thinking, like, this revelation of what Mayday is, and it is a real thing, and that, you know, hits really strongly with June, because the whole season three was her trying to find it and then coming to the realization of there is nothing. We've made this up. We're trying to think someone's going to save us, but we have to save ourselves. So it's like, I know that some fans were frustrated with season three because they just thought it kind of went nowhere and it took its time. But it was so important to build that world and build that realization where she comes to think, well, that's nothing. Yeah, I really love the way that landed in this season. I had a little lump in my throat when June said that.
When the woman first said that she was one of the women who June saved, June didn't seem very moved by it. Like, I was incredibly moved by that, but June wasn't. It's like she couldn't really take a compliment or just couldn't accept that that was something great that she did. But then later, when she gets told that she's actually Mayday and what, like, she did was part of being Mayday, the look on her face was she was finally so pleased and proud, you know? Like, and so I just thought, oh, it wasn't enough to actually meet someone who she helped. It was actually feeling that she was actually a part of that group, that she actually belonged to something bigger, that actually is what sort of gave her those feelings.
Yeah.
Just backtracking slightly, when she first met that woman who was someone that she helped, you know, free, I love that she says,
I thought you'd be taller,
which is like this universal thing people say about celebrities when they finally meet their like idols in real life, right? And I was like, wow, so June is like an idol in this world. Of course she is, because she's done a lot. But it just reminded me of how she's viewed by the other women who have fled Gilead. And it also reminded me how like June is every bit as, this is not new, but like it just was a reminder to me that June is as brilliant and as a strategist and as incredible as Serena is in her own right, right? Yeah. Last episode, I was talking about how Serena is this incredibly powerful person who can pull stuff off. So is June on the opposite end. And so that scene just reminded me of like these two women and their juxtaposition and how kind of crazily amazing they both are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that line. I thought that was really relatable. And it also made me feel slightly bad in that like for a long time, I think a lot of us have been finding June slightly annoying or a bit much or whatever. And it made me feel bad for feeling that because I was like, Serena is easy to love slash hate because she's essentially terrible. Every now and then does something good. And you kind of like buy into that, but you're like, no, your true nature is you do horrible things. That's who you are. You know, she's kind of a clear cut character in a way to me. Whereas June is a good person who's been forced to do all these horrible things, who's been forced to use people and you know, make all these moves. And so she's a trickier person to love because of the situation she's been in. But it made me feel bad for feeling that way about her. I wanted to be reminded, and I was glad I was reminded of how just amazing she is.
And I think it's important that Moira is here for this too, because we are Moira, I think, in the you know, Moira, and she go way back, but it's complicated and she thinks June's a messy bitch. So it's like,
exactly.
Yeah. But it like, I think to have Moira in that scene, and we see Moira seeing this interaction.
Yeah.
And the woman is Lily, who gives June her credit. Yeah, and we see Moira see that, and maybe it's a light bulb goes off like, okay, yeah, maybe I'm not giving her enough credit. And Lily is played by Christine Coe, who she was just recently so great as Nina in Only Murders in the Building season 2. She was introduced in there. But, yeah, she's great and great voice. And, yeah, I look forward to seeing maybe an expanded role that she might play across this season.
There's also a moment where Moira gets a little bit of cred among these women as well, because do you remember when they get introduced to some of the women?
This is Moira and June Osborne.
Introduces them by saying,
they're both in Boston.
And June did the Angel's Flight. So there's this kind of, you know, reputation that precedes, especially June, but also Moira too in a way, because she was present in Boston and like everything that goes with that as well.
Lily also mentions they've got a couple of girls in the Jezebels. And, of course, Moira was there. She was a Jezebels girl.
Yeah.
Form A Day, you know, embedded in Boston. So, yeah, I think that's a nod to her as well. Yeah, just to see their legacy kind of does loom large. That's good. So then, you know, they're there to try and get the message to Nick about Hannah. So that's kind of the intention of their visit there. But, yeah, that expands as the episode goes on. But first, we're back in Gilead with Serena and Tuello. You know, different response to how the funeral went down. Serena's high, feeling great, getting flowers from Christopher Broderick. There's a high commander in DC who's got his own calling card that he's sent. So leadership is very grateful.
And Tuello is admiring, you know, the power that she can attract there as well. He's there kind of quite impressed that she's getting these bouquets from important men. And did anyone else notice he's wearing a teal-coloured tie in this scene or maybe even in the whole episode?
I hadn't noticed that, but I noticed he's the smiliest we have ever seen him in any episode. Usually he's so po-faced and serious, but he was like teeth flashing everywhere. He was loving life in Gilead.
I love in this scene as well, Serena does get to what we kind of alluded to last week. You know, you couldn't possibly be gathering information to take back to the Americans or the Canadians. Mm-hmm. And he says, no, not at all. Like, sure, Mark, we believe.
He was giddy to be there.
Yeah, exactly. And then that's where, of course, she says, we wouldn't want people to get the wrong idea. Hint, hint, it's getting hot in here.
I think in that scene with the flowers, though, is a bit of a reminder of what Serena brings to Gilead, which is what a great wife she would be, how connected she is, all of those like soft power skills that she has, that she can become a dynamic duo with somebody.
Yes. Yeah, she's definitely fishing in this episode for the other half of that duo, isn't she? I found the scene so confusing because I'm like, is she making advances on him? She really seems to be making advances on him.
She does kiss him.
Why? Is she just enjoying kind of flaunting the kind of sexual power she has over Tuella, or does she have some kind of agenda that's not realized in this episode? Like, it was very confusing to me.
Yeah, I did wonder, like, does she actually have, you know, kind of small feelings for him? Because she does kiss him by the end, right? And I'm like, what is happening? What is going on? I was very shocked in that
scene. She's like over here flirting ridiculously with Tuello on multiple occasions in the episode. And then she's over here trying to woo a Gilead commander husband, you know, like.
While disparaging her dead husband as well, saying like he's not strong enough to have kept around.
I thought that was like so fantastic, actually, because she was kind of on a high thinking that she had just landed herself a very powerful husband and a way to come back into Gilead. And basically we know what she loved about Fred, which was that scene when they were dancing in all their full glory. And I think she thought that she had found that again, but even better. Mm-hmm. But of course, it's a if that marriage was going to happen, it's a marriage of power. It's not a marriage of sex. So she is like staring down the barrel of kind of like never having sex again. And there's Tuello. And it's kind of like, well, when in Rome, you know.
Oh my God, amazing.
And yet nothing happens. It's a peck on the cheek and then, bye-bye, Serena.
I feel like I should be wiser to this show's scripting, but, like, I always fall for the breadcrumbs they're leaving and then they bait and switch me and I'm like, oh, why didn't I see that coming? Of course she's not staying and marrying Lawrence. Silly me.
Well, I can't believe it after last week when I was like, surely there must be a man in Gilead who wants, you know, a beautiful wife and a baby. Why didn't I think of Lawrence? You know?
Because, hello? That's why. Like, he's not going to have a bar of that. I love that he was stringing her along.
Yeah.
Because we were all there watching on when she and Winslow and Fred paid that nighttime visit to the house and made him rape June while his wife listened. There's no way. That's true. So it was very sweet revenge, I think.
Oh, I had forgotten that because I was like, this is mutually beneficial if they were to get together, you know, especially also they're both like intellectual powerhouses of the movement of Gilead. But you're right. That's what Serena did. That's why he's never going to get with her. Never going
to
happen.
And I think also because he actually genuinely seems to love his wife a lot. Mm. And I think that she would just be mortified if he ended up marrying Serena.
Yeah.
But the question does still hang. Like, there's no place in leadership for a single man is what Commander Mackenzie says. And, like, I don't think that point's disappeared. So what's going to happen with Lawrence?
Well, you see, because, like, everything is always about power, right? And I think that this showed just how much power he has. If there's anyone in Gilead who can get away with not being married and not having a baby, it's him. He's probably like the only one, you know, but he has that much power that he doesn't need to marry Serena. You know, she needs him, but he doesn't really need her because all the skills that she can bring, he doesn't give a shit about. Mm. You know, he doesn't want to make people comfortable at his house. You know, he actually wants to make them uncomfortable. That's what he likes.
This is interesting. This, because at the end he says there's no place for unusual women in Gilead. Mm. And now that's making me think you're an unusual man. Mm. Does your line foreshadow there is actually no place for an unusual man like you? Or perhaps what you're saying, Natalie, that, you know, they will accommodate.
Yeah, it's interesting. And also, I mean, High Commander Mackenzie seems like a real piece of work in the void that Fred has opened up. You know, things may not be the same. The rules don't apply that where, you know, Fred needed Lawrence, but Mackenzie seems a whole nother piece of work.
I think this episode spent a lot of time establishing Mackenzie as the new center of power in Gilead and making a big point about how he is different and he's watching people like Nick. He's actively going to pursue people like June and it's going to be a very new world order with Mackenzie at the top.
Center of power in Boston, Gilead, because he does reference leadership in DC being very on board with Serena doing well abroad. So we still get the sense that this is very much a Boston-based leadership, you know, scenario we're looking at.
Yeah. And he makes the point. Well, we get more details on Mrs. Nick. Rosie, Rose.
Yeah, she finally gets a name. Woo-hoo.
Absolutely. So, you know, she's the daughter of an even higher up high commander. Mm. And there's a lot of curiosity about how they met and obviously why they met and, you know, putting two and two together. So, you know, the inference being that he chose the daughter of a high-ranking high commander and that she is receptive to maybe some mischief of a Mayday kind. So, yes, that was hinted at, and Mackenzie has made a point of saying he's very good friends with her dad. Jason Butler-Hanna is the actor playing Mackenzie, and I'm sorry we hate you already.
It's true. You're doing a very good job.
He is the guy in the trailer who says,
"Juno Osborne is a cancer. We have to cut her out."
Ooh, very punchable.
He does also say to Nick, you know, treat her right, talking about Rosie. And I was like, what does treating a woman right look like in Gilead? What counts as that? I was curious. I found that line kind of funny because how anti-woman Gilead is.
He does seem to love Rosie though, you know, like the greeting he gave her was just so effusive. And so he really seems to care about her a lot, and he also seems to really care about Hannah a lot as well. So it's kind of funny that we're seeing these like terrible men, but we're also seeing this other side of them as well. But I thought that he, like the relationship between Nick and Rosie, Serena understood it immediately, and I think Mackenzie got it wrong, you know, because like Serena is so cluey. As soon as she knew that Rosie knew the Mackenzies, she knew exactly why Nick was with her, because it would give him access to Hannah.
Yeah.
Whereas Mackenzie is just assuming that like Nick is just a typical Gilead guy on the up and up, and that he's just using her for her proximity to power. And I thought, oh, he's got that wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't clocked that. Good point. I had not clocked that.
Mm. And in the call, June does say, can you maybe move there? But he probably doesn't need to because he's got the relative connection. And Mrs. Mackenzie, Amy Landecker, who we've seen before, and there is the reference in the recap at the start of this episode to, was that first episode of season three when June went back to get Hannah and they had their interaction. But, yeah, Amy Landecker is back. She's joking about what a wife should do about their dinner party conversation, but good Lord, hers leaves a lot to be desired. kind of suggesting we would never want Agnes to find out something terrible had happened to her mother. What are you suggesting, you terrible woman? But it's also quite funny there at the dinner table, obviously, Amy Landecker is married to Bradley Whitford, so it's her talking about a second marriage.
Wasn't there some great framing at this dinner party scene, the way we had the Mackenzies framed together and then often Rose would be completely shut out of the frame and we'd just have Nick and Serena together, like almost like they were a couple reacting to this conversation about June, and then there's Lawrence in the middle like a game of tennis, like flicking backwards and forwards, watching them all as they react.
Yeah, absolutely.
So on that conversation point about not wanting anything to happen to June, let's see if I've read that correctly, because I think that we've commented over the years that June also seems to have nine lives. Like, I know that we said that about Janine, but also it was kind of like, how does June sort of keep getting away with things, or like why would she get posted somewhere else? Or I can't recall the stuff that we've said, but I know in the past we've sort of wondered, like, how is she not getting more punished for this? That kind of sounds like she hasn't been punished because the Mackenzies actually have intervened and saved her because they love Hannah so much that they didn't want to harm Hannah's mother.
Oh. Yeah, Mackenzie makes a line that
I've come to regret my former interventions on her behalf.
I did wonder about that.
I wondered, was that any time, like, you know, Hannah's been used throughout the years. There's been some catch-ups and visits and things. Like, obviously, Fred has been in contact about that, or maybe Serena straight to does Mrs. Mackenzie have a name? I don't know, Mrs. Mackenzie. So somehow, you know, they've made contact with Hannah to bring her to the torture chamber, to bring her to the school and to have June look on that time when she was screaming in the car. I don't know. What else has there been? Yeah, other interventions.
Because there has been a couple of meetups as well arranged, clandestine meetups. So I wondered if he was referencing allowing June to see Hannah a couple of times when he said that.
I feel like we got the impression at those times that it was like the Martha who had smuggled her out or whatever, and the commander and the wife hadn't known about it. So I was wondering if it was maybe to do with the aftermath of her visit to the Mackenzie's household. Did the commander potentially have a say in what her punishment or otherwise was after that, and maybe kind of helped scale it back a little bit to be forgiving?
Was pretty light
her?
On. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, good point. And also when the Martha got caught and June had to participate in the hanging, you know, could have been worse for June as well. I mean, it was pretty hard to actually hang the woman, but don't get me wrong. But, yeah, there could have been more serious consequences for June.
So where do we think they're landing now? So in the past, they haven't wanted to harm the mother of their child, but she's a cancer who needs to be cut out. Like, what does that actually mean? What are they happy to do now?
Well, they also know that she's responsible for Fred's death, right?
But they're kind of happy about that, right? No one misses Fred, you know?
Yeah.
They were probably going to kill him anyway.
No, but they did want to put him on trial, as he said. You know, he did want to give him a trial. So June did rob him of that.
I actually took that as on like trial in quotation marks. You know, I took that as we actually wanted to kill him ourselves.
No, that's exactly what I mean. By trial, it's a euphemism for we wanted to get to him, not June. Yeah. But
she denied him that opportunity.
Yeah,
I read that conversation as the Mackenzies basically saying we want June dead. Mm-hmm. We don't want Agnes to know about it at least yet. Maybe when she's a bit older, because she's a strong girl. And the reactions on Nick's face were horrific. And the reactions on Serena's face also looked a little bit shocked. Like, she didn't want June killed. That's, you know.
Oh, really?
That's her arch enemy. She wants to have some fun back and forth with her.
Well, she wants to do it. Yeah.
And then later on the phone call between Nick and June, he outright warns her about the Mackenzies, suggesting that, you know, she's basically got to watch her back.
Mm. Yeah, this is the threat hanging over June now.
Yeah. Mm. And on Nick, honestly, if he is going to be a spy, he needs to work on his body language. Dude. But he needs to learn a thing or two from Lawrence, including laughing in the face of Tuello when he wants to catch up with him and not doing it maybe on, you know, visible, highly lit bandstand, pergola, whatever it was, area.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah, after Mackenzie came up to him, he sort of says, fuck, under his breath as Mackenzie walks away. And I'm like, what did you think was going to happen? You are totally visible. This is so obvious. What are you doing?
Exactly. Honestly, our guy has to get his act together, truly.
It is kind of funny that he's kind of a spy who was left out in the cold.
Very much. Bum-tish. And then from there, we obviously, Serena stays a little while. So that's the scene where she tries to make the play for Joseph.
Okay. Like, aside from what they were actually saying, weren't these two actors just so good together? Like, I don't think, have we not really seen the two of them, just the two of them having like a quiet interaction like that? Because it was such a joy to watch that.
Yeah.
That I actually kind of wanted them to get married, you know?
I I did think they would be perfect. I was like, you guys are both incredibly smart. You are the intellectual powerhouses of this movement. It's a perfect match.
It was a kind of wonderfully intimate scene that kind of took you out of the world of Gilead for a moment. You can almost imagine them just as two regular people in the world for a minute there.
Yeah, he's remembering being a lecturer and his students talking about toxic masculinity. Yeah. That was reminiscing about the before times, but no.
The other thing about their interaction was I actually feel that I learned a little bit more about Joseph in this because, and he kind of fooled me as well. Like I actually thought for a while there, like I was sort of taking that bait and thinking that he was kind of into the idea, especially once she put his hand on her belly to feel the baby and the look on his face. And I thought, oh, he loves children. He actually loves babies. And I thought that is because I have never really understood why did he create Gilead? You know, like he's too smart, you know, like why, like considering what we know now and in how he's tried to help June and he seems to have regrets. Well, why did he do it in the first place? But I think I now see a little bit of his motivation, which is the whole purpose of Gilead really was to...
For the babies.
Yeah, it was because the environment was so terrible or something and that they want to have more babies. And I thought, oh, that actually makes sense to me now.
Mm.
That said, I don't feel that in Canada we really... Considering Gilead was created because of these terrible and environmental troubles and the low birth rate, that never gets discussed in Canada, you know?
That's true. I'm sure it's a problem there too.
Well, yeah. I mean, the border's
not going to stop environmental destruction, you know, on a global scale. Because remember when was it the Brazilians that were coming to Gilead to investigate?
Mexico.
You know, so this is a problem elsewhere in the world as well. But you're right. It doesn't actually ever get, I mean, maybe that's why there's Gilead supporters in Canada. There are a certain group of people who are worried and think Gilead's the answer to these problems, or they're just Gilead supporters for other reasons, because they love God or their interpretation of God.
But yeah, so considering that, so I feel like in that scene, I finally got a little bit of understanding about why he might have been involved in creating Gilead in the first place. And that's why I thought that he actually might have said yes to Serena. But anyway, we know how that turned out.
Well, it's a no for now.
True. Never say
no. Episode 3, guys. So Mark's waiting outside while she's talking to Lawrence, because obviously he's her ride home, because then they're at the hotel and she calls him inside to say goodbye and so on and so forth. So then the next morning she shows up to the High Commander's thinking, although there is that little moment outside with Lawrence where she just wants to double check, did you call this? And is this, you know, are we a thing? Are we on? But how terrifying would it be to have someone just say to you, I'm sorry, Serena, and then walk straight in the room? Her gait as she walks in there is much reduced. Yeah, but we love it.
Sure do.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. So when he says, do you have some kind of expectation of me? That was, that's a bit of, there's your first clue. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, what she's offered is not that bad, except the fact that they're kicking her out of the country that she helped create. That aside, could have been worse. Basically, she's becoming, diplomat at large, basically. I love she was very quick to ask for the staff and the budget. She's
that was amazing, wasn't it? Well, I'll need a staff.
How can I make this work for me? So respect that, but they don't have, you're an unusual woman, and Serena, we don't have the proper infrastructure for unusual women to live within our borders.
Isn't it like she's just falling for the same crap again, which was thinking that there is a place for someone like her there. Like they want her to be a wife, you know. They don't want her to be have any kind of power or even do machinations in the background, no matter how skilled that we know she is and I think that Lawrence knows how skilled she is. They don't want a woman to do that in Gilead, and yet here she is, minus a finger, still thinking that she might be able to do that. It's like, oh, my God, woman, like, wake up. It's not going to happen.
And Mark tried the night before to tell her that.
Yeah.
He says,
I spent so many years studying this country.
Is it different than you expected?
Not particularly. Surface-level beauty, doing its best to paper over a stunning amount of hypocrisy.
That was a good line.
Yeah, it was. Dig at Serena too.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's, you know, warning her that you're finally free. Are you sure you want to throw it all away? But she's ever the patriot, confident, thinking that she's going to hook up with Lawrence or someone else. So she'll be right. But, yeah, next day, very different mood. Also that night, Mark does say to her that men in power can't resist showing how much power they have in relation to Lawrence, not having the meeting with him that night when he tried to. But obviously it's a foreshadowing of the next day. But, again, very much in contrast to women in power, this Mayday group who, you know, they truly have walls of remembrance to their dead and the women that they got out. So, like, there's a constant reminder of why we're doing this and, like, the human cost of doing it all and just the shared power. No one's at the top. It's not a triangle of hierarchy. It's everyone just manages their own attempt to get everyone out of this hellscape across the border. So, yeah, I thought that was a very nice contrast.
I also like that line Lily put to June in the episode, that whenever women do, you know, outstanding things, they always put it down to luck. You know, they never own it, unlike the men of Gilead.
Exactly. Yeah. No, they
don't do outstanding things, but will own everything that they can.
Absolutely. And they will claim credit from other people's things too. Also, fun fact that they're blaming America definitely for the killing of Fred. They've crafted this entire narrative very quickly about that. So that was good.
I think Lawrence has had a lot to do with that as well, because he very much wants to put it all on America.
Fair. Deflect. It was good.
Yes.
So on the strength of that, Serena, with her checking account, I guess, and her staff, will be heading back to Canada. I do enjoy seeing her back on the plane with no explanation, just quietly taking up a seat up the back.
Very humbled.
I love that cut too, where she's walking out of the chamber and then it cuts straight to her in the plane walking through. I really like that. edit in particular.
Yeah, yeah, that was a good one. And the director of this episode, we've mentioned, Dana Gonzalez, is a cinematographer originally by trade and, you know, shot Fargo and directed some Fargo too, but yeah, has directed this and the next one coming up. So he's got a block of two here.
There is some interesting light play in this episode, especially when June and Nick were on the phone. Mm. He was practically drowning in sunlight.
Yeah.
Like in every shot, it was so oversaturated. That was really interesting because I don't think we've seen that before. And I wasn't entirely sure what that was communicating at that point. Maybe it was just, you know, a pretty way to depict that scene. But I definitely noticed that. And then also when Serena was entering the chamber, she's backlit and like drowning in sunlight as well. And then enters the darkness of the commander's chamber, which, why do they hate light? Why are they always sitting in the darkness like vampires? But those are sort of some of the light things I noticed in this episode.
Mm. I thought the light with Nick when the phone call was happening was a throwback to Nick and June's meeting where she brought along baby Nicole in that house. Mm. And there was a beautiful scene in front of the window that was quite well backlit with the sun coming in.
Mm. I like the fireplace was burning there as well while he was on the phone to her, just over the shoulder, some embers.
Yeah. Keep those fires burning.
Mm. Mm.
I guess for me, the light streaming in on Nick felt very, just felt very pure. Like that's what he represents for her. He really is. He's like a little bit of, I don't want to use the word purity in the wrong way, but like a little bit of purity in Gilead where there was no other agenda. It was just love. It's just pure love, which I thought was quite nice. But she was so opposite of that. Like she was really in a dark place.
Mm-hmm. And on while we're talking colours and light sources, Moira obviously is still dressing in maroon. She's never really shed that colour.
Oh, I didn't notice. Mm-hmm. Is she really?
Yeah, I
noticed that as well,
a couple
actually.
Of layers of it.
Yeah.
But June is in khaki, like an army fatigues kind of outfit. Yeah. Now, so, yeah.
Martha-esque colours almost.
Yeah. She's lost that Red Riding Hood jacket that she massacred Fred in. It's probably the dry cleaners.
That's true.
We'll save the very last moment of the episode, but let's backtrack a little bit because there's another storyline going on here with Lydia, Janine and Esther in the hospital, just the one colour, just the white hospital. And Lydia.
Speaking about characters in bad places like June, gosh, Lydia's not in a great place this episode, eh?
Yeah, 100%. She is racked with guilt. Well, she takes it out on Esther, who is, you know, lifeless. There's looking for brain patterns on the screen there in the hospital room. The beeps, I was listening for a Belinda Carlisle song, the beeps. But Lydia, when she slaps her, you know, by all accounts, lifeless body, no change in the beeps. It doesn't register in the body lying in the bed. So that's
true.
Not a great sign.
When I said last week that Esther was going to get punished, I did not have in my mind that she was going to get slapped while being in a coma. I couldn't have predicted that one.
Who could predict that? Yes. But, I mean, when Lydia, I guess we could have, but, yeah, go on.
It actually was classic Lydia, though, wasn't it, where she just lashes out and then she feels immediate regret.
Yeah.
And I just thought this is just now a pattern with her. It's like it's time to learn from this Lydia.
I know. If not now, when? All of the times. But then she immediately goes into Janine's room and pleads to God, you know, wails basically, you know, she does not deserve this. I know you're unhappy with my behavior. Sometimes I've lost my temper. I've made choices. I was trying to keep my girls safe. So, I mean, way to make it about you, Lydia, but also it's what a moment. That delivery is pretty epic. And she promises to turn things around. I will do things differently. I promise you. I promise you. Please.
That's true.
Ball's in your court, Lydia.
It is so rich for Lydia to say that Janine doesn't deserve this because she didn't deserve to lose an eye either, did she?
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
or get sent to the colonies.
Yes. Or to be a handmaid, quite frankly. Any of it.
But, you know, better late than never.
Yeah.
But this is a real turning point for Lydia, isn't it? Like this is...
Potentially. She's put it out there. She's made a promise to God, to her God. Very interesting, wink, wink.
Well, I think this kind of makes sense because
the Lydia that we've seen has kind of been her reactions and her behaviour has been pretty much kind of the same over the last few seasons, and wondering how this character is going to evolve and what her role is going to be. And already we are learning about the power that she has. So interesting that she gets Naomi Putnam there with baby Angela, and she says, "Thank you for coming." And Mrs. Putnam is like, "Well, I kind of had no choice." And I'm like, "Didn't you? Like, why didn't you? Like, what was that conversation?" You know, like, yeah. I feel like we're still getting bits of like hints or examples of the power that Lydia does actually have. And so it's interesting now to see that she's having this turning point moment. So I feel that Lydia's character is evolving. So it's going to be curious to see what she does with that power.
Yes. Very, very interesting. Yeah. I too missed not seeing the scene where Lydia convinced her to come. But yeah, I think also another callback to previous episodes, the hospital scene in which Angela, Charlotte, confused by all these baby names, the small child, Janine's baby, you know, was fighting for life. And it was the human touch that Janine offered that apparently brought her back to life. That was that.
I love that scene. Mm. And that was a beautiful scene.
Could that adorable little child look any more like Janine and any less like Mrs. Putnam? It was a wonderful moment when she was sitting down on the bed, kind of, you know, peeking out at her mother.
When she entered the room as well, you know, as Naomi was carrying her little slippers, like on her little feet swinging as she walked in, I was like, that is just so cute. Yeah. I love this baby.
Too cute. Little doll with the flaming red hair.
I know.
She looks like gorgeous. Yeah. But then they got me in that one moment when Naomi was saying that I did think that maybe we might lose Janine. All along I was like, no, she'll be fine. She's always fine. But then the goodbye piled on and I went, wait a minute. They are going to kill off Janine. But of course, no.
That was one bait and switch I did not fall for. The whole time I was like, she'll be fine, guys. Chill out.
Yeah. I went to the brink. But then she's fine. She's fine, guys. So clearly she woke up. She's in the chair outside. So no words yet. There's one look to Lydia, isn't there? But then, yes, obviously Lydia has made this big promise and I, for one, can't wait to see what comes of it.
That look she gave her was pretty haggard. She looked pretty broken. It'll be really interesting to see what state she's in as she recovers. And did anybody else notice? I might just be reading into things now, but but that color, that blue color, came back again.
Where?
In the hospital when Janine's woken up. So when we see Lydia wake up and see the empty bed. The kind of medium shot there, there's this really kind of bright blue cabinet, hospital cabinet, sitting in the center of the frame. And it's that same, like, you know, bright sky blue color.
I haven't noticed this yet.
That was in the previous episode with Luke and June. I just, I'm going to see it everywhere now. It's weird.
All right. You can be on blue watch.
Yeah, I'm on blue watch.
Amazing.
Work out what it means.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, you said last time it was where June was growing the grass.
Yeah, it's almost like a kind of moments of touching back to earth, or like kind of moments of daylight of seeing things as they are. So
cutting through the normal colors, cutting through the Gilead colors.
Yeah, I'm going to work on that metaphor as we go along the season.
Okay. Only ep 3. We'll have it down pat by the finale. All right. And so then obviously the episode ends with Serena touching down, but Lily has given June the heads up, obviously. We see, good Lord, this renter crowd, the candle carriers, they are everywhere, aren't they? There's the Serena lookalike reflected in the window. They have a moment. And then, hello, ambush in that small laneway. Not a great security detail, I have to say. But anyway, knock, knock at the window. Guess who's there? It's your worst nightmare, June Osborne, and she's mad. So,
never touch my daughter again.
Drive the car.
Never touch my daughter again.
Drive the car.
Demon
back
June.
It up now.
Oh my God, her voice was like a demon.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it was a great moment.
Very good ending.
This is precisely why Serena said she needs a security detail, you know, to protect her from those who wish to harm her.
Yeah. I mean, I thought she meant Gilead, but...
No, I thought she meant June.
Yeah, because, like, as if June would ever hurt someone with a baby, you know? Like we know June and we know that she would never do that. I did enjoy that the last moment that we see of Serena, she's in retreat
which I quite enjoyed. But the other thing that I really liked, and so, like, you know, forgive me for this one, but shout out to June's car.
Subaru.
Yes. Speaking of someone who also has an old dented Subaru, I like that we see June a lot so far this season driving. And there's something powerful in that, you know, because women don't get to drive in Gilead. And I think that the only time we ever saw a woman drive in Gilead was actually Emily when she ran over a guard.
That's right.
Which was some of her best work.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and there was that time she drove out to see the aunt and then just kept driving because the woman was hanging from the rafters. Remember last
episode? That was in Canada. So I think in Gilead, the only time we've seen someone drive, I think, was Emily that time. But other than that, you never see a woman driving there. So I am enjoying that June's kind of driving herself everywhere. This is happening a lot, you know. First episode, she's in that car and she's out, you know. Second episode there, she was off in the car again. But also, this is a little bit more silly, but it was so funny how the car was blocking the tunnel, and the way it was posed, it almost felt like Knight Rider, that like the car had its own personality. I was like, yeah, go the Subaru.
Yeah. While we're on the subject of June and cars, remember that ridiculous car that was in the garage in the episode where she had the baby and she tried to get out, but it just wouldn't, and it was a metaphor for Nicole, Holly and her tummy. But, yeah, that was the car. She couldn't go anywhere in Gilead when she tried to steal a car, a ridiculous muscle car, which was amazing.
I can't believe we haven't mentioned this, but there was a moment in the episode where I thought, oh, Fiona's going to like that. And it was where Moira mentions Holly. She says,
I had that in my notes. I forgot to get to it. Absolutely. I am there for everything. Thank you, Natalie. I forgot to bring that up. Yes, my heart does sing a little bit when they mentioned Holly. I love Jerry Jones and was very disappointed to hear she couldn't make last season because of COVID. She was meant to be in some episodes. But any hint of Holly, I just think she's June's North Star. Yeah. I still hold out hope that she's survived in the colonies. Mm. Tough old broad that she is. Too. I hope she comes back.
Yeah, more Cherry flashbacks, please.
Thank you, Natalie. I also wondered when they went to that outpost, is that where Oprah does the Radio Freedom broadcasts? You know, I thought
God,
waking
so
up to an Oprah cameo.
Is Oprah in Canada now? Yes. That's awesome.
Anywho.
Did anyone else think that final shot where June turns around and walks away from the camera was reminiscent of the scene in beneath the overpass where she handed Nicole to Emily to escape Gilead?
Yes, it did ring familiar. Yes.
I thought they were harking back to that there.
And a train went past as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was just beautiful the way it blurred and the lights were flashing and the train was going past. And then I did feel like it seemed familiar and I couldn't remember where from, but that's right, Haiti. Good for pointing that out.
They're all referencing each other. It's so good. So it's a rich tapestry. Predictions. Where are we at? What's going on? So, Serena goes back to the detention centre. So she would have been free in Gilead to go and marry whoever she wants. But back when they land, she's off the detention centre again. What's her situation? I know we're speculating last week, but I still don't quite know.
Yeah, I don't. That's a very good question because it's not like the Americans/Canadians have given her up to go be this ambassador, right?
He did just say for now. And
she's got to wait for her allowance from Gilead to come through and her staff and her staff member and her, you know, whatever else.
That's true. It takes a couple of days for the transfer. So unless they Osco it. But who is going to be on her staff? That's what I would like to know.
Ooh, good question.
Casting.
Oh, my God, that blonde woman in the window.
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding.
Her Aryan princess sidekick.
I think it's really exciting to have her back in Canada because there's so much potential there with she's clearly got this following there, kind of ready to do her bidding and follow her. She just kind of has to realize that power. So I think she's going to really go hard down that path this season.
Well, it's interesting. Does Serena change? Not sure, but she's just been rejected by Gilead and I don't think she takes rejection very well. And when is she actually I know I said kind of, you know, wake up to this Serena. When is she going to wake up? You know, like she has now been rejected from Gilead, but they now want her to be the lovely face of it.
Does she still want to do that? Like, you know, she actually has a whole other opportunity in Canada. Does she actually want to do this?
Well, I think she does because she's got her fangirls in Canada. She's got someone to keep feeding her ego. And if she ditches the whole Gilead thing, she's a little bit adrift, right? Like, her identity is entirely tied to that. I feel like those fangirls and boys are going to keep her going.
I think absolutely, because I mean, that whole spiel she was giving to Willow about, you know, all the good things, it's a shame you can't see all the good we've achieved, and I thought, name three things, but name one. But I thought, you know, from Canada, she has all the care, no responsibility, because it's not,
yeah,
she doesn't have to put up with all the idiot men,
mm-hmm,
but only enough to make sure the money comes through. But yeah, you know, she can live her life ostensibly and pretend, you know, she can soak up the garbage and spread it and create her own little following. I don't know. Yeah, I think she's still, I agree, like, yes, what's the immediate rebound after being rejected? But I feel like Serena's always going to Serena, right?
Yeah, she loves projecting the reality she wants to see and not living in denial of the reality she's actually in. I think she'll do well in Toronto.
Good for her.
She likes being a firebrand, and so she can continue to play that role in Canada more effectively.
Yeah. And I'm still thinking, well, A, I can't believe it's taken me an hour to name check my Elizabeth Moss interview, but here we go. She did hint that, you know, there is this moment where June is going to hold out hope again of maybe wooing Serena, so that, you know, there's still some sort of interaction that they've got to come, I think. I hope it was a little hint.
Also, Serena has to keep Serena in because June needs something to fight against. It's the face-off that's been established for the whole season. So Serena will Serena, June will June. We'll love it and watch.
And we are here for it.
So at the moment, we still don't know Esther's fate.
Yes.
So does she survive or not? But I think we still suspect that she's the woman that we saw in the trailer who looked like she was being tortured in a bed, right?
Yes. So yeah, it was some movement in a bed. Yes.
I'm pretty sure that was her. That looked like her. So, yes, I think she'll be okay. But in terms of what state of okay between her and Janine, that's the question.
Yeah.
And then I wonder, it looks like there is still, despite Lydia having a kind of change of heart in this episode, it does look like from the trailer that she's still going to be punishing Esther. So how changed is she? I guess we'll find out.
Exactly. Is the change of heart only in relation to Janine? Is it localized? Yeah. You know, Serena's going to Serena, June's going to June, Lydia's going to Lydia.
And the other thing we haven't seen yet is what's going to happen with Luke. Because it sounds like he's actually going to be the one that wants to go to Gilead for Hannah.
I think
but
so.
We didn't quite get there in this episode, so I do wonder if that's what we'll see.
I agree, because his attempts have all been stifled by the fact that he's the women calling the shots in Canada. Like, he wasn't allowed to go to get that message to Nick to get Hannah. Like, his impulses can't act on them here, but I don't, not to say he'll have any power in Gilead, but yeah, maybe he might, you know, reconcile that his best chance is going in. Who knows? Yeah, that's a good one. And where's June's head at? What do you reckon, Haiti?
Yeah, I think June was in a pretty bad place at the end of this episode. She's just had that call with Nick that's kind of ended up in a dead end. Like, she's realized that, you know, her reach within Gilead through Nick and Lawrence and even Tuello to an extent has kind of reached as far as it will go, and she still can't keep Hannah safe. So I think she's in a really interesting position where she's got the temptation of Serena, like access to Serena, keeping her in Canada, but she's got the temptation of needing to protect Hannah, pulling her back to Gilead. So it'll be really interesting to see which path she kind of goes down.
I agree. And also in being reminded of all the things she was able to achieve by being in Gilead, like getting the kids out, you know, all of these amazing achievements she had from being in there, I'm sure it's setting off alarm bells. She's still got in the back of her mind, Emily's gone back. It's, you know, she knows the consequences of going after Fred and what impact that had on Hannah. She's got to fight the impulse to lop off Serena's head as well for the same reason. You know, Mackenzie is out for her. Ooh, All right. That's Ep 3 done and dusted, and we can't wait for Episode 4. Thanks for listening. We hope that helped. We're off to go and I guess buy a secondhand Subaru. I'm not sure. Episode 4 of Season 5 of The Handmaid's Tale will premiere on SBS and SBS On Demand on Thursday, the 29th of September. Episodes are dropping a little earlier at SBS On Demand in the afternoon, so if you cannot wait, get in there and we will have a new podcast recapping it ready for you. And if you prefer to watch on TV, it screens on SBS at 9:30 p.m. Thank you to my co-hosts, Sana Kadar, Natalie Hanley and Hayley Island. And thank you for listening. It is so good to be back. And we love seeing what you're making of this series as it develops and as you watch along with us. Tell us more on Twitter. You can reach out and find me at anythingbutfifi and use the hashtag EyesOnGilead. Hayley, where can we find you?
At Hayley Island.
Sana, where can we find you?
At Sana_Kadar.
And Natalie, what about you?
At Natalie Hambly.
And feel free to leave feedback while we have you and give us a rating and a review on your favourite podcast app. It helps other people to find the show.
Give me your theories on the blue colour.
Help Hayley out with this blue colour. What do you think it means? So in the meantime, we've got weekly waits until new episodes drop. What is something you can recommend, unprompted, at SBS On Demand? What have you been watching, Natalie?
I'm so excited that The Good Fight's back. I love that show. So between Handmaids and The Good Fight, I've been hanging out for those all year.
Very good. Yeah, it's a good time. Hayley, what about you, channel manager of SBS On Demand? What have you been watching?
Oh, I have to recommend Atlanta. It's one of my favourite shows, and the final season is airing on SBS On Demand and SBS Viceland at the moment. It's the kind of creative brilliance of Donald Glover and a kind of wonderful takedown of white fragility, among many other things. I can't recommend it enough. It's so good.
So get in there. They're all streaming. Yeah, we have this week-long wait to get to Handmaid's Tale episodes, so get in there and tell us what you've been watching. That'd be great. Eyes on Gilead is produced by me, Fiona Williams, and edited and mixed by Jeremy Walmart. You don't own me, I'm not your property, so take your dirty, filthy, stinking eyes off me.
We have a strict no spies allowed policy.
Until next time, don't let the bastards grind you down.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.